News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Curfew in effect for a mile square area of downtown Los Angeles following days of protests against ICE raids in restaurants, businesses, and at immigration hearings where migrants who show up for regular check-ins are being rounded up. ABC's Jim Ryan with more on another place that's happening.
In San Antonio, agents on Tuesday escorted migrants walking out of their scheduled immigration hearings onto a bus and led them away. Protester Kat Yaraka notes that the ICE officials covered their faces and removed their ID badges.
If you didn't know you were doing wrong, you wouldn't be wearing a mask. You wouldn't have taken off your name tag. You'd be proud of the work you were doing.
The group escorted onto a bus Tuesday included several men, a woman, and a child. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
President Trump is warning against any protests at the big military parade in Washington, D.C. this weekend. It's being held to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the founding of the U.S. Army and just happens to fall on the president's 79th birthday. This is ABC News.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulotz. Governor Evers announces a tourism hat trick in Wisconsin with the third record-breaking year in a row. Wisconsin Department of Tourism Secretary Ann Sayers said the state's tourism industry brought in a record-high $25.8 billion in total economic impact in 2024. This surpassed the previous year's record of $25 billion. This year's tourism hat trick includes a record-breaking amount of state and local revenue, a record-breaking 114.4 million visitors, and a record-high economic impact for tourism. The Trump administration argues that charges should not be dropped against a Wisconsin judge indicted for allegedly helping a man who is in the country evade U.S. immigration agents seeking to arrest him in her courthouse. Attorneys for the U.S. Department of Justice urged a federal judge on Monday to reject a motion filed by Milwaukee County Circuit Judge Hannah Dugan seeking to dismiss the charges against her. Justice Department attorneys say dropping the charges would be unprecedented and allow judges to be above the law. A motion hearing in the Chippewa Falls Lily Peters homicide has been rescheduled. The Chippewa County judge in the case had an illness necessitating the Monday hearing be rescheduled for a later date. That comes just days after the court ruled to seal records on behalf of a 17-year-old defendant, Carson Peters Berger. Court documents show Judge Stephen Gibbs granted a motion to seal the transcript of the investigator's interview recording with Peters Berger, as well as a flash drive containing a video of the interview. Only attorneys and the defendant can have access. The Wisconsin Court of Appeals previously ruled that Peters Berger will be tried in adult court. He was 15 when 10-year-old Lily Peters was killed in April 2022. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulotz.
The Brewers beat the Braves. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, baseball. The Brewers and Braves series wrapping up today in Milwaukee. A recap tonight. Last night, the crew with a 4-1 win over Atlanta, thanks to home runs from Jake Bowers, Jackson Chourio, and six solid innings pitched by 24-year-old right-hander Quinn Priester.
The cutter, you know, at the top was really good today. And, you know, having that confidence in that pitch gave me some confidence. I was able to execute more often than not.
Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
You know, that kid has just been getting better and better. And it's credit to the front office for really picking this kid out specifically, saying we got a chance. And I remember like 3 weeks before we got him, they've done their research, and it's great to see it happen.
NFL, day two of the Packers mini camp in Green Bay. Now that Jair Alexander's been released, the team taking a look at wide receiver Bo Melton as a possible defensive back in practice. In golf, Division I State High School Golf Tournament in Madison, Peyton Elbers, a junior from Wanakee, the winner after a three-hole playoff. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Mostly sunny today. We'll get to around 83 for a high this afternoon. Tonight, a few scattered showers and thunderstorms with a low in the upper 50s. Tomorrow, more of the same, scattered thunderstorms with some locally heavy rain and a high in the mid-70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable.
Outside now, it's 68. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Ken, as I like to call him, my least favorite Martin, chairman of the Democratic National Committee.
The other night I said to myself for the first time, I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
Matt Flynn.
You go into combat and the general goes, I'm afraid. He reminds me of the coach of the Jets back in the 90s. The other team would come on the field and say, boy, they look big. No, I swear to God. And the Jets lost 12 games. I mean, right. You can't have this kind of stuff. Get this guy out of here. Put in Ben Wickler.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Jay Matt Nair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, it's a new way to teach kids math. Maybe Greg and I will learn how to add. Also, Rich Smith from the 6th Street Theater will be here. Join us.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. This is News from the Setter, WRCE.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. Welcome back. It is 7:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Wednesday morning. It's June 11th, 2025, and still to come, our homeroom segment this hour, we'll be talking to two local teacher union leaders, one out of Eau Claire, one out of Green Bay. We'll talk about the state budget debate and what lawmakers could be doing to better support our public schools, transparency with the voucher school system, and much more as we kind of wrap up the school year and get some people's thoughts heading into the summer break. Then in our next hour, we will be talking to Earl Ingram. We'll have Sean O'Malley with your markets and money. And we'll talk to Melissa Baldoff in our climate check. She will also be talking in that segment as well, having formerly worked for Governor Tony Evers, about the new Dan Schaefer column at the recombobulation area that says that Governor Evers did a terrific job, but he should not run for a third term. And we'll see what Melissa has to say about that. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot is standing by as well. But first, let's take care of that Scotty Summer Text to Win contest. You know the drill by now. We've got a couple more days to play it. Four times a day, you can get $100 cash or a pair of Brewers tickets. Every entry puts you in the drawing for one of the grand prizes, a weekend stay in Door County or Wisconsin Dells, a little gas money to get you there as well. A different keyword each time that you need to text us through the Civic Media app that you can download over at Apple, Google, or elsewhere. Go to one of the stations on the app and then use the text button at that particular radio station on the app to send us that hour's keyword. For this hour today, for a pair of Brewers tickets, good Brewers tickets, club-level seats, you're going to love them. For a pair of Brewers tickets this hour, the keyword is beer, B-E-E-R. Should have got that Brett Kavanaugh thing out. I like beer. So beer, B-E-E-R. You have until the end of the hour to text us this hour's keyword. Your next chances to play come at 11 a.m., 2 p.m., 4 p.m., different keywords each time. For this hour, the keyword is beer, B-E-E-R, for a pair of Brewers tickets using that Civic Media app. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot now, where we said that Tuesday was going to be the driest day, and then, you know, the rain comes, and then the rain's going to come some more, and the rain's going to come some more, but it's not here yet. And so that's been making for a very pleasant morning here all around Wisconsin, Brittany.
It sure has been. I mean, it took forever for the clouds to clear out of the entire state yesterday. I thought that was going to happen much earlier, but it took its sweet time. So thankfully, the sun is shining across a majority of Wisconsin right now. There is some patchy thick fog far northeast in areas like Shawnee, Eagle River as well. Also a little crisp and cool this morning far up north, 43 degrees this morning, 70 already into West Bend. We are looking at temperatures far north, making it to the 70s. and down south into the low to mid 80s. Now, we could see some 90-degree temperatures sneak into places far southeast in the state today. So we're really cranking the heat up, and the humidity stays on the comfortable side of things. So a nice day, a lot of sunshine to start the day. The clouds will be increasing as we move through this afternoon. We do have multiple low pressure systems lined up and headed towards us, and it's going to bring some showers and storms by around 5 or 6 o'clock tonight. Far west is going to see those move in first. It's going to spread into the central areas of the state late tonight. And then overnight, it'll continue to stay in the southern half of the state into tomorrow morning before the rain starts to lift north. And it's going to become heavy at times far north tomorrow throughout the day into our Friday. And then it drops back south through the state into our Friday and Saturday. So it is just going to be a wet mess as we go through the end of the week. We do dry things out in the weekend.
I was really glad to get a little bit of time yesterday afternoon to get the lawn mowed because, you know, again, for anybody who didn't, and if they can't get to it this morning, you know what they're thinking. They're like, I'm going to have to bail this thing, you know, by the time you find a break in the rain to get out there. I'm looking across the field here, and I'm like, I haven't looked at the stats, but I'll bet second cutting of hay is underway for some folks maybe already. And again, you have to watch the weather on that as well. So we'll keep an eye on the sky and on your forecast. Brittany, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next hour.
Sounds good.
All right. Coming up on the Civic Media Radio Network later this afternoon on the Maggie Dawn Show, she'll have on in the 4 o'clock hour State Representative Renuka Mayadev on the Democrats' bill package that will protect Wisconsin from unlawful federal actions. We've talked a bit about it on this program as well, saying that if President Trump tries to claw back some federal funds that Congress had already approved previously, then maybe Wisconsin needs to, you know, not make some of its federal payments. And so that'll be talked about. Tanya Atkinson from Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin will be on at 4:30 this afternoon. And in the 5 o'clock hour, Bharat Ramamurthy, Senior Advisor for Economic Strategy at the American Enterprise Liberties Project and former Deputy Director for President Biden's National Economic Council, all about, again, the ways that there was a recovery that was going on, you know, the best recovery on the planet post-COVID, but it wasn't perfect. And so Donald Trump was able to exacerbate that and has now put the economy in a near tailspin. So I'm sure that'll be one of the subjects coming up from Maggie Dawn a little bit later on her program, starting at 4 o'clock here across the Civic Media Radio Network. Rob, where are my manners? I let Brittany go before saying good morning from Tigerton. Hazy sunshine, 57 degrees, 5 lawns to mow in the Tigerton area. Yesterday, he had 5 in the Wittenberg area. Then says he had lasagna for lunch at Brianna's in the Wilderness Travel Center at exit 196. That's at Highway 29 and 45 South near Wittenberg. I've stopped there many, many times on the way to Manitowoc and Sherry's parents' farm. Said yesterday he had to wear a jacket mowing the lawn early on until the sun came out. Has a doctor's appointment in Shawano this afternoon. And he said, get that Supertramp song, It's Raining Again, from 1982, a year of awesome songs. So, yeah, maybe tomorrow we'll have Supertramp's It's Raining Again to, you know, keep you company as well. So thank you, Rob, for all of that. Just wanted to check through the text line here. Oh, a lot of Scotty Summer text to win people. A lot of people sending beer as the keyword here. But here it is from Dave in New Berlin. I heard your thought before the 6:30 break about, you know, what is the Midwest and what is up north? And he said, consider this. Daytona Beach is up north relative to Miami. With that thought in mind, Dave says, how far north do I need to go to be up north? I thought up north was Wisconsin Rapids. I don't know if we've ever put Parker on the spot for this. Parker Olson in Madison Studio A2. Parker, for you, where does up north begin?
Where does up north begin, Pat? That is a fantastic question, and I am pulling up a map right now so I can give you a good answer.
Okay, well, at least, are you going to say Wisconsin Dells so that, you know, I can pile on, or are you going to give me something closer to Highway 10 or 29 or something like that?
I'm going to say north of, like, north of Minneapolis, basically. So, like, where you are, basically.
Buddy, Minneapolis is in Minnesota.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you for
What's up north in Wisconsin? What point in Wisconsin are you up north?
Chippewa Falls is like my
There we go. The gateway up to up north. That's, yeah. You know, sucking up is always rewarded around here. We do appreciate that. So you're close. You're very close. Highway 29 is up north. And so there are folks in, Wisconsin Wisconsin Rapids, Stevens Point going, hey, no, we're the gateway to up north. No, it's Highway 29.
You're way, sorry, yeah.
I don't make the rules. I only enforce them. So there we go. And Tony, of course, Ashland. Yeah, look, Highway 2 is not our definition of up north for these purposes, unless you live, you know, in an igloo, perhaps.
That is the north of north.
Yes. But yeah, Tony's like, ugh, Eau Claire is hours to the south of us. Well, yes, point well taken, but it still is what it is as far as up north goes. So we mentioned all this because it was in our newsletter today is your definition of the Midwest. And whether you include certain states, you know, your Pennsylvanias and Montanas, is Missouri part of the Midwest? You know, Nebraska, yes. Kansas, yes. Or, you know, what point are we running out of mid in terms of Midwest?
Yeah, I think Kansas is probably the furthest south I'll go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Missouri, so, I guess, dips a little below there.
Not Arkansas.
No, not Arkansas. What?
Okay.
Is that a thing that people say?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh.
Scott in Shorewood, it says Sheboygan is the way to go on that. So, and again, if you're in the eastern part of the state, Sheboygan does make sense. You know, you're getting there. Yeah. But, I mean, you still have Green Bay, you know, yet. And when we're talking about up north, we're talking about really getting out of any potential for traffic signals. And that was key to Chippewa Falls because for the longest time, Chippewa Falls was the last signal light that you'd hit on Highway 53 before it became a freeway. And then you wouldn't hit a signal light again until you got off the freeway in, you know, Rice Lake or Hayward or whatever. So you can measure it many different ways. I happen to choose the signal light in Chippewa Falls.
I did not know about that. That's really interesting.
Oh, yes. Huh. Yeah, yeah. There's going to be a parade in Oconomowoc, of course, like in a lot of other communities coming up for the 4th of July. But in Oconomowoc, according to a post I'm seeing on the dumpster fire once known as Twitter, in Oconomowoc, they have said that their 4th of July is going to be politics free. And needless to say, in this area of around Oconomowoc, which is quite Republican, a lot of folks are not happy that their legislators, that their congressman Scott Fitzgerald, that Senator Ron Johnson would not be permitted to march in the parade. And I have to say that when I first started reading this, I was going to side with the folks who were critical of it, having been in many parades myself. But then, and this is the twist, Oconomowoc, the Oconomowoc Rotary Club, came up instead with a different event. Their tweet reads, "To underscore our spirit of inclusivity, we warmly invite representatives from all political affiliations to gather for a special moment of unity featuring the renowned University of Wisconsin Marching Band. The band will perform their beloved fifth quarter celebration at the Village Green following the parade, providing a symbolic moment of unity and welcoming participation from all members of our community." So what they're saying to the politicians is, if you're marching in the parade, you're inviting people to boo or to disagree or whatever, but come to this moment of unity. And I would understand if you said, no, that's not good enough. You know, your representative should be in the parade. But here's the thing. Some politicians like to march in the parades. They like to go down the route and shake hands. There's others, frankly, who don't and are going to be very happy about announcements like this, because first you've got the unity event. But just as important or more important to some of them, instead of being in the parade where people are jeering or whatever, you get to just work behind the scenes. You can go up and down the sidewalk. You can go around the, you know, the barbecue, you know, thing, the beer tent, especially, shake hands and not have to, you know, sweat like crazy on a hot, sunny day in the parade. So for Oconomowoc, for the Rotary, the fact that they created this secondary event which then allows the elected officials to just meet the crowd one-to-one instead of in a parade. I don't have a problem with that. I know other people do, and I understand, and I'd love your thoughts on it as well. Should all politicians just be welcome to march in parades and the crowd should just behave themselves? Or do you like the twist that Econowoc has put on this? Would love to know your thoughts on that. From the heart of America's up north, truly up north, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend a part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Usinger's has been making America's finest sausage for over 140 years. Now Usinger's fresh brats are flash frozen and vacuum packed so they stay butcher shop fresh for 6 months in your freezer. And because there's no air in the package, there's no need for chemical preservatives. Usinger's fresh brats are the freshest, most additive-free you will find. Enjoy some this summer with our other Great Link products. Our backpack sausage seals in flavor and leaves out chemicals. Remember, if it's got the elf on the label, you've got quality on your table.
An elegant, intimate experience in fine dining is right here at Ho-Chunk Gaming, Wisconsin Dells. The Copper Oak Steakhouse and Lounge features choice cuts of Angus beef and fresh seafood prepared to perfection over an open flame grill, complemented by an extensive selection of fine wines and signature martinis. A passion for detail in exceptional dining. The Copper Oak Steakhouse and Lounge at Ho-Chunk Gaming, Wisconsin Dells. Open Thursday through Sunday. Call and make your reservations today.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In discussions over the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, backed by Donald Trump, that's making its way through Congress, none other than Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has emerged as the most prominent Republican critic of the bill, saying at a recent Milwaukee Press Club event that it is, quote, not even close to adequate. Johnson has said he wants spending cuts to go even further, including making cuts to Medicaid. But Johnson's position as a critic of this bill makes him especially influential in these negotiations. But let's not forget the last time he was in a similar position. In 2017, he was a critic of the Trump tax cut bill, but what he fought for was a tax break for certain types of businesses, perhaps not coincidentally, businesses owned by his largest donors, Dick and Liz Uline. In 2018 alone, the Ulines received more than $200 million in tax breaks because of this bill. So as the Big Beautiful Bill is negotiated in the Senate, let's not forget this piece of recent history.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
The Elder Care Locator is here to help you live your best life as you age at home. Our call center advisors are ready to connect you with trustworthy local experts. Help is just a phone call away at 1-800-677-1116.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WRCE. I'm Bo Hendricks, and here's what's going on in Richland Center this morning.
We're here today with, well, so far, president of the Richland Center Rodeo Committee, Gary Deaver as president and Kenda Deaver as secretary. But missing in action right now is Dean Reinhardt, who's the treasurer. But I think we'll do just fine, and I'm sure Dean will eventually find his way in. How are you this morning, Gary?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
And we're here today because you've got a very busy weekend coming up.
Yes, we do. It's the finals for Wisconsin High School Rodeo. It's our 66th, and we're getting ready out there and ready to go and excited about it.
66, you don't look that old.
I'm not. I actually am, but I was in diapers at that time, probably.
Probably. So, and Kenda, what is your responsibility as secretary?
Well, I start in December getting all the donation letters ready to hand out and get everything going and getting all the everything organized and get everything mailed out about February to see, get the donations out again and getting ready for people to see if they want to donate to get saddles and our buckles and things for scholarships. And when the people mail their camping forms back to me and their stall forms, and I just after I get that back, I stand back and watch the guys work.
You're kind of the supervisor for the weekend, aren't you?
Just this week, they let me be supervisor.
I think you used the word boss, though.
Yes, for 1 week.
So, and Dean has found his way in, and Dean serves as the treasurer, and he actually was on earlier this morning.
Yeah, I was in and put up with Henry and Phil and give him a quiz, and Phil got 7 right, and Hank got 8 right.
Oh, you know, that's no fridge hanger, though.
I know it.
But, you know, you had some interesting things on there that I think probably piqued people's interest of what will be going on this weekend.
That's what we try to do, is get people thinking about it and get them interested, and, well, maybe we'll go out and find out what that really is. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun doing that.
And all the action begins Thursday. And, Gary, we were kind of talking about it because the shooting competition, which I don't think people really realize, goes on.
Yes, that started back in roughly 2009. And it's called light rifle, which is 22. And you can enter the rodeo either light rifle or trap or both. And several kids do. We have like 12 light rifle and about the same amount in trap shoot. We come up here to the Pine River shooting range up on Cooper Hill, and they do the light rifle at 10 o'clock on Thursday morning. And then at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the kids go down, and the Muscadet Sportsman's Club hosts that event for the trap shoot. And it's an excellent, I mean, that these people step up and let us do that and help us out.
Now, one good thing about that, if you have a child that, you know, if you don't have a farm or access to a horse or something that you can do in rodeo, it's still, you can be involved in the rodeo.
Oh, yes, definitely. And we encourage that because, you know, a lot of kids don't have the small farms anymore. And there's a lot of, you know, contestants. If you're going to be a contestant, of course, you have horses, but you don't have to. They have a national competition, which is in Rock Springs, Wyoming, July 13th and 19th. So, like every event, you qualify in shooting, you go out there and compete with all the other folks.
Now, when a student qualifies for nationals, is all the do they go as a team? And does, or is the all the expense on
well, kind
the family,
of,
or how does that work?
Well, the whole, each family would take their, you know, they're contestant. Or if you can't, you buddy up with somebody and go. I mean, and they do their thing. Wisconsin does have a team, Wisconsin, but they still individually place the buckles like they do here and at state and national.
How many competitions do they get involved with before they end up here in Richland Center for state finals?
I believe there's 7 rodeos throughout the state. You have Arcadia. I don't have it wrote down in front of me right now.
We got Dubuque. We got Arcadia. We have Elkhorn. That's a new rodeo we had this year. And we have
Lancaster.
Coleman. And I think we have, well, then us were the finals.
Mm-hmm.
They have a couple other ones in there.
Toma.
And do the kids have to compete in each one of those or in a certain amount before they come to state?
Well, they take the total points. Basically, yes, because they'll take the top 4 for the nationals. And you earn 10 points down through 1 point during your competition. State finals, they double. So you can top point goes to nationals, so in order to go to nationals, you should compete in every rodeo, yes.
So, but it's all based on points.
Yes.
So, the other thing that's going on, too, and maybe, Kenda, you can kind of talk about this, is the Queens Contest?
Yeah, on Thursday night, this year we got 3 Queen contestants running, and on Thursday night we have Queen We have queens that are, they have on Thursday night, they do a, they have tests they do, and then they have a, you've been in there more than I have, I think. They have like, they have their gowns, they go up, and then they have speeches they give. And then they have on Friday, I think it is, isn't it, Dean, that they do a horsemanship? No, it's Thursday. It's Thursday now? It's
Thursday afternoon at 3 o'clock is horsemanship.
Well, thank you very much. And hopefully, crossing my fingers, that the rain holds off.
All right, well, thank you.
You've been listening to WRCE's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Take your favorite WRCE shows with you on the go by downloading the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google stores. For WRCE and Civic Media, I'm Bo Henriks.
News from the Center, WRCE. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Andrew Iverson is Wisconsin's new state director for USDA's Rural Development Office. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Wednesday. And his number one goal right now, making sure you and I know exactly what services the Rural Development Agency has to offer.
Well, that's a big part of it is you're exactly right. It's the outreach. And so it's taking our programs and educating communities and individuals and organizations what USDA Rural Development does. And so that's a big part of it is the outreach, going around the state and making people aware, first and foremost, of what we do. Another thing we want to focus on is streamlining our application process. That's the one thing we want to look into to make sure that we are providing excellent customer service to Wisconsinites.
Alan Iverson is the new state director for the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Rural Development Office, headquartered in Stevens Point. Prior to joining the Rural Development Office, he served as executive director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin.
65 years ago, Bob Steffes built a legacy, one auction at a time. Today, Steffes Group carries on that tradition, delivering trusted service with integrity you expect. From the first conversation to the final bid, we're more than an auction company. We're your partner in sharing your legacy, because here, handshake still means something. Visit steffesgroup.com right now for information on auctions in your area, nationwide, and to find a local representative near you. That's steffesgroup.com.
When hot weather strikes your cattle, milk production drops and feed intakes decrease. Summer heat also impacts the quality of your herd's reproduction. Protect your cows and grow your bottom line. Add BioVets Bovine Gold Light to your cow's daily ration. Bovine Gold Light keeps the herd hydrated, maintains milk production, and keeps your breeding program in check. Learn more about Bovine Gold Light at bio-vet.com.
Innovation.
And dairy farmers across the state have voted for 8 representatives on the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin Board of Director. There was only one district where more than one candidate was running. That was District 21, Crawford and Vernon counties, where Chad Syme from Gays Mills was selected to represent dairy producers. The election results totaled just under 11% of dairy farmers from across the state that actually participated. And participation is strong at this year's Wisconsin State FFA Convention. Tonight, they will have a special recognition of their adults that have contributed to the FFA, the Wisconsin FFA Hall of Fame induction ceremony, as well as announcing the Stars Over Wisconsin that will advance to national competition this fall in Indianapolis. You can follow our action at MidwestFarmReport.com. Our team will be there. That's a look at what's happening in food news on a Wednesday. I'm Pam Yonke.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Mostly sunny today. We'll get to around 83 for a high this afternoon. Tonight, a few scattered showers and thunderstorms with a low in the upper 50s. Tomorrow, more of the same, scattered thunderstorms with some locally heavy rain and a high in the mid-70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 66.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
We need a fun listener name, something the followers of the show can call themselves. I thought, how about couch potatoes?
Potatoes?
I said it as a joke, and Todd cracked up. He goes, I love that. Whatever it is, folks, embrace your inner couch potato. We are not meant to work in the farms and hunt food. We were 1,000 years ago. But now, I think God wants us to sit back and be entertained.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Lily Roberts, she is from the Center for American Progress Action Fund.
They're trying to pretend that this bill would be good for the working class because of this really small carve out to our tax laws. The no tax on tips piece does not at all even come close to addressing the problem of wages in this country. You know, a third of workers who work for tips in the first place don't make enough money to pay taxes at all.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome our pal and Key and Peele writer Rich Tallarico and Up North News editor Christina Laurie, and I talk fun Wisconsin stories. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Here's your reminder that before the hour is up, use that Civic Media app and text us the keyword beer, B-E-E-R. That's this hour's keyword for a pair of brewer's tickets. And you'll also be in the running for those grand prizes, a weekend getaway in Door County or in Wisconsin Dells. Again, use the Civic Media app. Go to any one of the radio stations on there. Use the text feature and text us the keyword beer before the end of this hour. And by the way, while you're on the app, use that voice note feature as well. Remember, I mentioned our phone system is undergoing a little remodeling job right now, shall we say? So in the meantime, you can text us, but you can also leave us a voice note, and maybe we'll put that on the air as well with your take on, you know, the new Culver's chicken sandwiches, for example, or anything that you heard so far in all the various news stories that we covered, or what we're about to cover as we head into our homeroom segment for this week, where we talk about public education, all of the opportunities, all of the great things about education in Wisconsin, and of course, all the threats to it as well. And so joining us today, we've got Brent Bergstrom. He's president of the Green Bay Education Association, and Jeremy Traynor, president of the Eau Claire Association of Educators. Both are WEAC affiliates. Brent and Jeremy, good morning. Thank you for being here today.
Morning.
Good morning.
It's so great to have you both here. Jeremy, do I understand right, you're fairly new in the leadership role in Eau Claire?
Yeah, well, I started my presidency, I guess, about 10 days. So I'm a seasoned veteran. No,
yes.
I'm a science teacher here in Eau Claire, and I've been teaching that. I just finished my 26th year, which is why my hair is a little, you know, less than normal. But and I've been on the exec team for our union for quite a while. I was also on the WEAC board of directors. So I have a little experience going into this, but in terms of being the president and the leader of our union, fairly new. So,
okay. And Brent, tell us a little of your background as an educator and being active in the union.
Yeah, I'm a music teacher in the Green Bay Area Public Schools, and I have been serving for the Green Bay Education Association as the president for about 3 years. I have experience teaching in Eau Claire, Peshtigo, and Green Bay. So I've been all over the place in different sized districts across the state.
Okay. So we're getting into the end of the school year, but we're also still in the thick of the state budget debate at the state capitol. So we'll have some ground to cover in both of those areas. But Brent, I wanted to start with you because we've spoken on the program a couple of times here about Green Bay's decision at the city level to put the impact of school vouchers on the actual property tax bills, and that some folks want to make sure that you and your union teammates get credit for that, because this is all about transparency is the way I want to put it. You know, it's very tough to take on a threat if the threat's invisible. And it sure seems like a lot of the ways that our tax dollars have been going to the voucher system have not been transparent. And so you and your team have played a role in improving that, haven't you?
Yeah, I wish we could take all the credit. We were really a very, very small part of the work that was done. We've been talking about it for years, and finally the city council did pass a vote to show that up on our tax bills. So we're really happy about it, because the public deserves to know how much money is being funneled into private voucher schools.
And that was, I would imagine, not it was, is still a surprise to folks when people are told by you or others, you know, again, I think so many people think the voucher program is still this little experimental thing. And for just say the taxpayers in Green Bay, it most certainly is not, right?
Correct. Yeah. We lose about $13 million in the Greenberry Public Schools to private voucher schools. So that's a big, big, big ticket item there. So the big part that usually surprises people is when we say that voucher schools are reimbursed for special education at 90%, where public schools are only reimbursed at 30%. It's clearly not equal.
No, and that actually, that was a story statewide, and I don't know if it was the Associated Press or Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, but somebody put out the story, and then a lot of other outlets picked it up. The kind of thing we have been saying for months, if it almost feels like years here, is that disparity in just that area, the special education reimbursement rate. Jeremy, do you feel the same challenges there in terms of bringing transparency to the taxpayers so that they understand and they can't just say, oh, it's those teachers' unions that are responsible for our property tax bills? It's a real messaging challenge for you guys, right?
Well, 100%. And it's, you know, it's a challenge everywhere. I think we're starting to get some momentum. Just the fact that districts are forced to go to a referendum, you know, every 2 years. And then there's a lot of education that, you know, is involved in those referendums just to get them to pass. But the reality is we're asking our taxpayers to fund two school systems, and the system's broken. It doesn't work. There's no evidence that voucher schools are doing any better than public schools. It's the opposite, actually. And I think that the public needs to understand how much money they're actually spending on those voucher programs. So like in Eau Claire, where we just passed a referendum in November, and it was really a status quo referendum just to keep the doors open. And we're going to be going back to referendum, it looks like, again, soon. We're already facing a deficit. And you know, this voucher program is killing us. So,
and even if you take away the voucher part of the equation, if you're just looking at why there are so many referendums, and again, I feel like the message is only starting to get out that we're talking about 16 consecutive years of underfunding schools compared to the rate of inflation. So, Jeremy, when you say it's about keeping the doors open, it's literally that. Referendums are not nearly as much for, you know, new buildings, new gyms, new remodels, new whatever. It's to keep the lights on the way things are right now.
Absolutely. I mean, especially, you know, smaller school districts are literally going bankrupt, and it's scary. Luckily in Eau Claire, we have a very supportive community that has been very supportive of our past referendum votes. So we've been able to at least keep the status quo, and we've been able to do some remodeling, but that's not going to last forever. Some of our old referenda dollars are going to be expiring, and we're going to be asking our public for even more. You know, the funding formula at the state level has to change, and our politicians, you know, need to get on the same page and fund our public schools. We're going to have some serious issues.
That would be a lot easier if only we had a budget surplus, Brent. Oh, wait, we do. It's $4 billion that's sitting there. Brent, this is not an unsolvable problem in Madison.
No, it's not. And, you know, I mentioned that reimbursement rate before. The budget only calls for 60% for public schools. Again, big gap there between public schools and private schools. And we've been told time and time again that the Republicans will not come past even 35%. They might up it, but only to 35%. So the discrepancy there between the 90 and the 60 or the 30, it's huge, and it's not acceptable.
And then we get to the next step, which is the enrollment caps, because right now there is a limit to how much the state will pay for and allow for vouchers for kids to, you know, move from public schools into private schools. And yet those caps are set to be lifted. We have spoken to Eau Claire State Representative Christian Phelps about his bill that would keep the voucher caps on there. Jeremy, Representative Phelps is in your backyard there. How important is it for those enrollment caps to stay, and what happens if they actually are lifted?
I mean, it's vitally important that they stay. I mean, if they're lifted, we're already experiencing a declining enrollment. A lot of districts are, partially because of the voucher program. So when these kids leave the public school sector and go to the voucher schools, that reduces our enrollment at the public school, which also, you know, reduces the amount of funding that we get at the state. So it's a huge snowball effect. Not only are we losing money due to the voucher programs, but we're also losing students.
How is it in the Green Bay area, Brent, in terms of the public perceptions that some politicians, you know, are feeding into, like, well, this kind of competition is good. It doesn't, first off, should there be this kind of competition? Second, should it be there with public money? And third, does somebody have their thumb on the scales of this competition? But is that still the way it's kind of framed in conversations there, especially involving some politicians?
You know, I would say yes. It always has been that way. It's been that way since Act 10 with Scott Walker and trying to turn the public against public schools and turn it against teachers. When it comes down to it, though, you know, our union and our district is there for the students, number one. And we know that the funding is not set up for the success of our students. It's set up to hurt public schools. It's set up to cause a bigger divide between the wealthy and the middle class. And we really just need to focus on getting our money back into our public schools and supporting our kids and our communities.
All right, let's step away from the politics here before we wrap up. Brent, we're heading into the summer break here. I mean, do you have any observations on how the year went as an educator, as a local labor leader, and, you know, how you expect things to go next year?
You know, this is one of the, I think I speak for most of our educators when I say this was one of the hardest years we've faced. Between the political climate, things that are carrying over into the classrooms from the political climate across the country, and just educators constantly being piled on with all of the work to try to move our students forward and being blamed when that doesn't happen is a lot for our staff to handle.
Would you share in that assessment, Jeremy, as you look back at this year and what the education environment is like?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt our staff works incredibly hard. Our teachers are dedicated to our students, all students, no matter, you know, what their zip code is, we're there for them. And, you know, there's just been a ton of initiatives added to us, added to our plates. I think we forget that COVID wasn't really that long ago, and we're still feeling the effects of that across the state. There's achievement gaps. A lot of social emotional learning has been happening, you know, inside our classroom as well. That's been adding to us. Students are just different, and technology is different. AI is different. And so there's been a lot of things added to teachers' plates that were never there before. And so we're working really, really hard. I'm proud of our teachers. I'm proud of our students. We're you know, making improvements, but we certainly need some support from our state level. We need some funding. We need equitable funding practices. I have nothing against private schools, but I just don't feel like, you know, we should be asked to pay for them as well. You know, I think we need to put our funding back into our public schools and take some relief off of our teachers.
Yeah. And the work is getting done because of you and your colleagues. And then, you know, on top of the work, all that work from every educator needs some leadership as well. And thank you both for stepping up and doing that. Jeremy Traynor, president of the Eau Claire Area Educators, and Brent Bergstrom, Green Bay Education Association. Gentlemen, thank you both for everything that you do and for taking a little time with us this morning.
Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it so much. Still ahead today, we'll be talking to Civic Media's Earl Ingram about some of the stories that he's following in Southeast Wisconsin. And we'll be talking to Melissa Baldoff, who normally has our climate check segment. And we will, of course, still get into some climate check matters. But as a former staffer for Governor Tony Evers, she's got a few things to say as well about pressure that seems to be coming for Governor Evers to not run for a third term ahead of this weekend's state Democratic convention. That's all in the next hour of these mornings, powered by Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
And
as Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Summer. It's time for Civic Media's Scotty Summer Text to Win contest right here on this local Civic Media radio station. We want to hook you up with $100 cash, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, and the chance to win a summer getaway to the Wisconsin Dells area or an escape to Door County. Download the free Civic Media app in the Google Play or App Store. Then listen in for the keywords during the 7 and 11 a.m. hour and 2 and 4 p.m. hour. Text in the keyword and get set to win. It's Civic Media's Scotty Summer.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In a highly controversial action, President Trump is testing the reach of his powers by sending 4,700 military personnel into Los Angeles to suppress protests. What are Title 10, the Insurrection Act, and the Posse Comitatus Act? The Posse Comitatus Act forbids the use of the military to enforce laws against U.S. citizens under ordinary situations, but there are extremely rare exceptions. In his mobilization of the California National Guard and active duty Marines, Trump invoked Title 10, a statute enabling the U.S. Armed Forces. Section 251 says, whenever there is an insurrection in any state against its government, the president may, upon the request of its legislature or of its governor if the legislature cannot be convened, call into federal service such of the militia of the other states in the number requested by that state and use such of the armed forces as he considers necessary to suppress the insurrection. No such request was made by state officials. Under the Insurrection Act, the American Constitution Center notes three circumstances where a president may use the military on U.S. soil: when a local official asks for assistance, when an insurrection against the federal government or judiciary occurs, or when a state refuses to uphold civil rights. What constitutes an insurrection? That will likely be decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. Find more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Carmelo Anthony for the Bail Project.
Bad news, you've been arrested. Good news, you're innocent until proven guilty. If you can pay your bail, good news, you go home to wait your trial. If you can't, sorry, you go to jail to wait. But sure, you still presumed innocent. But since you can't afford bail, you've lost your freedom. That's not right. And that's why the Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting the in-cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
State Senator Kelda Royce.
The vast majority of people on Medicaid are already working, and it is Medicaid that makes it possible for them to work. People who are disabled or have chronic illnesses, and without that health care, they would be out of the workforce. They would have no ability to participate in the economy, and now they can. Medicaid is one of the greatest workforce programs this country has ever built, and they are trying to dismantle it, and with it, they're going to take people's lives and economic security.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WRCE. I'm Bo Hendricks, and here's what's going on in Richland Center this morning.
Michelle Ryan with DadCap is our guest to talk about some of the topics, the hot topics for the month of June. First of all, we talk about internet safety. It seems like that's kind of an ongoing thing, Michelle.
It is. You know, when consumers want information, advice, reviews, or resources, their first step for many is an internet search, and online search results can be very helpful and allow people to find what they're looking for quickly and accurately. But the systems that produce those searches are also used by scammers to steer consumers in the wrong direction and possibly to a fraudulent or imposter website. So we want to be sure that consumers are aware of this during Internet Safety Month and provide a few tips on how consumers can tell the difference between trustworthy and deceptive search results.
A lot of times you'll have some sort of protection, or you should have anyway, that will pop up and kind of give you an alert, won't you?
You could have that, yes. But there are two major ways search results can be manipulated by scammers, in that search engine optimization and paid search results. And so if we have awareness that those two things exist, we can pay attention to those pop-ups, know what they mean, as well as navigate the results we do get. So search engines are the tools used to search the web. You know, think Google, Bing, DuckDuckGo, and the others. And they're programmed to display results that are most likely to be what we're looking for. However, these results can be influenced by legitimate businesses as well as scammers to make their website appear first in the search engine. And that maximizes the visits that they could get. And the way that happens is scammers might use bots, keywords, and phrases generated by AI or even paid services to boost their fraudulent website in those search results. And then that leads us to that second thing, those paid search results. Those first few results at the top of any search are usually ads that companies or even scammers pay to have appear there when users make those specific searches. And so if you might see a legitimate company's name, including the name of a government service, or a misleading tagline to make users think that the website belongs to someone else. So pay attention, because scammers could even put their phone number next to trusted company names and try and trick you to get to their imposter website instead of the legitimate company that you are really trying to access.
What about paid search results?
Yeah, no, exactly. That's when, you know, we might see those misleading taglines to make the user think the website belongs to someone else. Those paid results may show that they're advertisements. They're going to be the top items that are returned for users. They may say sponsored on them as well. And that's helpful when they're labeled. It's when they're not labeled that we need to use those extra precautions and pay close attention to the information we're getting. And don't be afraid to scroll down, because that might be where your best result is actually located.
Old school letter mailing scams are back in the news, Michelle.
Yes, they are. You know, we talk pretty regularly about the latest technologies to steal consumers' information, but scammers still rely on the old tried and true tactics. And we need consumers to be aware of those old school methods. And some recent examples are letters, fraudulent letters that consumers have received in their mailboxes. And the first example is a letter that claimed to come from a Canadian law firm and stated that the Wisconsin-based recipient was eligible to claim a stranger's life insurance policy worth almost $10 million. And the reason given was that the original policyholder had no other relatives or beneficiaries, but they shared a last name with this consumer, and they were possibly a distant relative. So the letter was addressed directly to that individual consumer with the correct name, was printed on official-looking letterhead, and then the law firm asked for 10% of the money, so over $980,000, in order to process the claim. And that's where the scam is. You know, the law firm is part of the scammer, and it's not a legitimate firm in this case. And consumers could get tripped up by that when they're so excited to have received this potential opportunity for a windfall.
What about Medicare, Medicaid scams? Are those in the news too?
Yes. We also heard from a consumer who received a letter that was a scammer impersonating Medicare. The sender threatened the consumer, who would soon be turning 65, and they threatened him with a penalty fee for enrolling in Medicare past a deadline. The letter offered helpful tips, information, and resources. It provided a fake website and fake phone number if the consumer had any questions. And finally, it included a fake enrollment registration form to be filled out and sent back to that, quote, Medicare, that scammer. And, of course, that questionnaire asked for personal information that the consumer would have to give in order to, you know, not get that penalty and get enrolled.
What are some ways we can avoid getting in a jam?
Well, pause. That's the biggest thing, the first thing. Pause, then talk to someone that you trust. It's really important to not act right away so you can just get past the shock and awe of the letter or the threat that might be in the mailing or the phone call. And then research the sender. In many cases, scammers are not impersonating a real company, like in the law firm situation. And so you can do your research and figure out that it is all a scam. But then learn more about scams in general, because there's a lot of well-established templates out there. And if you just search the scam with complaint, you'll find out more information about it. But never be afraid to call Consumer Protection.
All right, Michelle, good stuff as always. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next month.
That sounds great. If anyone has any questions, go to our website, datcp.wi.gov.
Michelle Reinen, our guest here in this month of June from WRCO.
You've been listening to WRCE's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Take your favorite WRCE shows with you on the go by downloading the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google stores. For WRCE and Civic Media, I'm Bo Henriks.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Details just revealed this morning on trade talks between the U.S. and China. President Trump saying that the United States will get magnets and rare earth minerals from China in a deal that sets tariffs on Chinese goods coming into the U.S. at 55%. The president doubling down on his decision to send the National Guard into Los Angeles against the wishes of state and local officials. Here's ABC News Chief White House Correspondent Mary Bruce.
Despite objections from the governor, who says he doesn't need the federal presence and doesn't want them there, the president adamant they're needed to stop what he calls an invasion. Speaking to troops at Fort Bragg.
They're stopping an invasion just like you'd stop an invasion.
There are now more U.S. troops in Los Angeles than in Iraq and Syria.
In Los Angeles, a curfew is in effect for another half hour or so in a 1 square mile area of downtown following days of protests against Trump-imposed ICE immigration raids. This is ABC News.